Yes or no to this statement? Ban college football and jaws drop all over. Yes, we are talking about that time-honored sport, football, in the place where it first mattered, college, and we are talking about banning it. Welcome to Intelligence Squared U.S. I'm John Donvan. We have four superbly qualified debaters, two against two. And for a taste of the kind of poetry and passion and pain that comes to bear when we discuss the meaning of football, I just want to give you a taste, a sample of what one NFL player wrote back in 2001 about playing through pain. He said, "To this day, I will encourage people to feel the knob below my neck where the collarbone was sprung free from my sternum in the middle of a game against the 49ers. That was pain, and he loved it." So, are we talking about madness, or are we talking about courage when we debate the question of banning college football? Let's meet our debaters. On the side arguing for the motion to ban college football, Buzz Bissinger, a Pulitzer Prize-winning writer and author of the book Friday Night Lights. His partner is Malcolm Gladwell, a staff writer at The New Yorker and author of four bestsellers, among them The Tipping Point. Arguing against the motion, arguing not to ban college football, Tim Green, a College Football Hall of Famer and former Atlanta Falcons defensive end. And his partner, Jason Whitlock, a FoxSports.com national columnist and former offensive tackle for Ball State University. Our motion is ban college football. Let's talk to our debaters. First, Buzz Bissinger. I'm going to do that just for the sake of the radio edit. I'm going to do that again because you weren't wrong. I missed the cue, so I'll do it for you again. Our motion is ban college football. Let's talk to our debaters. First, Buzz Bissinger. And Buzz, in 1990, you wrote a book called Friday Night Lights. It is considered a classic of sports journalism about a small town, Odessa, Texas, and the trials of its high school team. It is considered by Sports Illustrated the fourth greatest sports book of all time. A movie came from it, a television show. And you have said that you, while critical of what you saw, that you have said that you love the sport and that violence is why we like it. So are you on the wrong team here?
Well, I don't think so. I think violence is why we like it. And look, nobody has ever accused me of being consistent about anything. I also think there's a vast distinction between what we're arguing here, which is college football versus pro players who are being compensated very, very well for what they do and know the risks going in. College players receive nothing beyond a scholarship that is really of questionable value because of the demands placed upon them. So I think what I've said is very consistent.
All right, Buzz Bissinger. Let's meet your debating partner, Malcolm Gladwell. Malcolm Gladwell, who can't seem but to help writing best-selling books, Blink, Outliers, The Tipping Point. In The New Yorker, you've written about everything from innovation to ketchup to social media, and of course, your piece that helped inspire this debate, the one where you compared college football to dogfighting. You're also Canadian. Canada has football. Is it any different in Canada?
Well, the difference in Canada is that we don't care about football.
Thank you, Malcolm Gladwell. Our motion is ban college football, and here to meet the team arguing against the motion in support of college football, Tim Green. Now, I earlier in the program read a quote from somebody who said, "Come touch the knob on my neck." And that was you, Tim Green. And we're all going to line up and do that afterwards. But this peon to punishment you wrote.
I'm not touching his knob.
I. You're going to go there already? Come on, we got to have some class on this side of the auditorium.
Jason, I totally deliberately stayed away from that line myself. So this peon to punishment that you wrote, what is that about? Why the glory of the pain?
It's how much can you take? How much can you take and keep going? And I think that's one of the great lessons of the sport of football. And I think that's why it's great for our youth. It's great in Little League. It's great in high school. It's certainly great in college because it teaches kids that life is tough. Things are tough. And then you pick yourself up and you go on. I think it's the greatest lesson in the game, and I think it's the greatest game that we play.
Thank you, Tim Green. And let's meet your debating partner arguing against banning college football, Jason Whitlock. And Jason, you are also a former player. You were an All-American, an All-State offensive lineman in high school and an offensive tackle at Ball State University, where you got a degree in journalism. You are on record, Jason, as saying that you are in favor of paying college players to play the game. So if you were given the choice nowadays, back at Ball State, would you play for free?
If we were playing back in the 80s, early 90s when I played, absolutely, because I thought the exchange was fair then. Coaches and football wasn't generating as much money. And I was prepared to take advantage of the currency that they were paying me in education. Not all of my teammates were. So, yeah, I would do it all again.
All right. Thank you, Jason Whitlock. Ladies and gentlemen, our debaters. So this is a contest, and in this debate, one team will win, the other team will lose, and you, our live audience, will choose our winners by your vote. Let's go to the first round of voting now. The keypad at your seat will register where you stand on this motion at this point as you come in off the street. The motion is ban college football. And if you agree with the motion, press number 1. And if you disagree with the motion, number 2. And if you're undecided, push number 3. And at the end of the debate, we will have you vote a second time. And at that point, we will reveal the results of both numbers. And the team that has moved its numbers the most will be declared our winner. So we go in 3 rounds. The first round is uninterrupted statements by each debater in turn. They are 7 minutes each. So on to round 1. And speaking first for the motion, ban college football, I'd like to introduce Malcolm Gladwell. He is a New Yorker staff writer. And Malcolm, you can make your way to that lectern. Malcolm Gladwell is a New Yorker staff writer, chronicler of the counterintuitive, and author of Outliers, Blink, and The Tipping Point. Ladies and gentlemen, Malcolm Gladwell.
Thank you. I should say before I start that I haven't debated since college, and that was many years ago, and that was in Canada. And in Canada, a debate isn't really a debate. It's simply an alternate mechanism of reaching consensus. So this is all very new and exciting for me. I want to make one thing clear before we start, and that is that this is not a debate about banning football, nor is it a debate about whether there are merits to playing football. You will hear, I'm quite sure, from Mr. Green and Mr. Whitlock that all kinds of wonderful things happen when you play football. You learn camaraderie and discipline and teamwork. All of those things are true, and neither Buzz nor I are going to dispute any of them. This debate is about a very specific question. Right now, in colleges across the country, schools field football teams for the purpose of offering recreation to the players and offering entertainment to fans and students and alumni. And the question is that appropriate? Buzz is going to say that's not appropriate because the players are exploited. And I'm going to say that it's not appropriate because schools should not be in the business of encouraging young men to hit themselves over the head. Let's talk a little bit about hitting over the head. Start with the simple physics of football. The human brain is a mass of soft tissue that is suspended within a hard skull, right? Every time you get hit, that soft tissue rattles around inside your skull, and the effect of that rattling around is to stretch and sometimes tear the connections between your nerve cells. In the course of everyday life, that almost never happens. In the course of playing football, that happens all the time. It is not unusual in the course of a game for a player to sustain hits to the head of between 40 and 100 Gs. To put that in perspective, if you were to get in your car and not put on your seatbelt and drive at 25 miles an hour into a brick wall so that your forehead struck the dashboard of the car, that would be a hit of 100 Gs. Right? If you reversed your car and went and did it over and over again so that you hit the brick wall 30 to 40 times at speeds between 20 and 25 miles an hour, that would be the equivalent of a football game. If you reversed your car and over the course of the next 3 months drove it at 25 miles an hour into a brick wall 1,000 times, that would be the equivalent of a college football season. Now, you're going to hear from Mr. Whitlock and Mr. Green. They're going to try and tell you that there are ways around this fact, that if we have better rules or better treatment of concussions or better helmets, the effect of that kind of injury can be minimized. That is a fantasy. There are ways to cut down on the number of concussions, but concussions are only a small part of the problem. The real issue is all of those thousands of tiny hits. There isn't a helmet in the world that can be designed that can take the sting out of those hits. And there is no way to play the game of football and remove those hits without turning tackle football into touch football. And last I checked, this was not a debate about whether we should ban touch football on college campuses. I once watched a football practice at the University of North Carolina where the players were playing without pads. They were just doing a simple scrimmage. And in the course of 20 minutes, one of the running backs sustained hits to the head of 79, 60, and 30 Gs. In 15 minutes, he had the equivalent of 3 car accidents. Now, what's the effect of all of that neurological trauma? Well, we know. It's a condition called CTE, right, which brings about premature death and the equivalent of Alzheimer's in people who are as young as 40 years old. I've seen pictures of the brain scans of people with CTE, and it looks like someone drove a truck across their brain. Now, we don't know how many ex-football players have this condition because you can't diagnose it until they die, right, until you do an autopsy of your brain. But there are people who estimate there are as many as 20% of football players who have this condition. And we also know that there are players as young as 18 years old who have been diagnosed with CTE. It's a problem that begins in high school and is made worse during college. Now, I have no problem whatsoever with grown men in full possession of the facts and risks of the game choosing to participate in a potentially lethal profession. Right? I have no problem with people who smoke cigarettes. I have no problem with people who do deep-sea diving. I have no problem with people who want to drive their motorcycles without a helmet on. If you want to play Russian roulette with your brain, fine. But college is a very, very different matter. Every single college in this country, rich or poor, big or small, is supported by the taxpayer dollars of the people in this room. They are subsidized by us. They are given immunity from taxes. They are supported by laws of Congress, by acts of local legislatures. They are in every way funded by the people in this room. And the reason for that special relationship between us and the world of higher education is that they are charged with a sacred trust, and that is to prepare the minds of young men and women to lead productive lives, the minds of young men to lead productive lives as full citizens of the United States. And nowhere in that social contract does it say that it's okay to promote and encourage young men to hit themselves over and over again in the head in the name of entertainment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Malcolm Gladwell. Our motion is ban college football, and here to speak against the motion, Tim Green. He's a College Football Hall of Famer, a former Atlanta Falcons defensive end, a lawyer, the author of 26 books. He has been called the Renaissance Man of Sports by both Sports Illustrated and the LA Times. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Green.
Thank you. Can I have the 2 minutes Malcolm didn't use? Okay. When I was first asked to do this, I asked permission from my wife, as any good husband will. And when she said, well, you know, what's the debate? I said, ban college football or not. She said, well, that's ludicrous. You know, you'll win that debate. I said, yeah. She said, you can win the debate, can't you? I said, absolutely. She said, who are you debating? I said, Buzz Bissinger, Malcolm Gladwell. She said, you've had too many concussions. And I have. And I agree with our opponents, Mr. Gladwell and Mr. Bissinger, in a lot of ways. Football is a brutal game. And I have grave concerns about concussions and the impact of concussions. I also agree that I think college football players, because of the revenues that they generate, should be paid. I think a small stipend, I think that they deserve that. And so in some ways I do agree with them, but banning college football, I mean, so I had to get over my initial horror at the notion, because of course football for me has done a lot of tremendous things. And then I looked at just our country, our society in general, and I thought about football and what it does in the colleges and how it's a unifier. Not just the guys on the teams, not just unifying people from different places and different ethnicities and different religions into one solid unit that learns to work together, but unifying
a campus, unifying the students, unifying the faculty, unifying the alumni, unifying sometimes entire towns, communities, and whole cities. And so in that respect, to me, I said, well, you know, how could we? How could we, Ben? College football is a wonderful thing. But then I wanted to look at the numbers, because obviously my opponents are highly intelligent men, they're passionate men, they're very learned, and I said, you know, what is it? What's behind this? And so I looked into the numbers as far as what does college football? What are the benefits of college football, and what are the detriments? Well, the detriments certainly are the head injuries. Now, I've got to say this, because we've got to get things straight from the beginning about the concussions and the G-forces. Because Mr. Gladwell talked about 100 G-forces when you hit your head into a brick wall at 25 miles an hour, 30 times a game. That does not happen in a college football game. That does not happen in an NFL football game, because when you get hit at 100 G's, you get a concussion. And when you get a concussion, now more than ever, you are taken out of the game and you are put into some rehab program. Now, back when I played, back when Jason played, it wasn't like that. It was you know, do you know where you are? No. How many fingers do I have up? 4. Okay, that's close enough. You're ready to go back in. It's not like that anymore. And so the game is evolving to become safer and safer, as safe as it can be. But it will never be completely safe. It won't be completely safe. So what I said to myself is, I said, well, let me look at some things that are maybe as unsafe or maybe even more unsafe than playing the game of football. And so, of course, automobile accidents came to mind, because the mortality rate is about 100 times higher for men in that age range that they're going to die in an automobile accident than they're going to die on the football field. And then I said, well, look, how about going out and riding your bicycle? That's right, that's more dangerous. Or downhill skiing. And then I said, well, let me look at sports. And so I went to the NCAA, and I looked at their sports, and I looked at a study that was done at the University of North Carolina. I looked at the study of the fatalities, direct fatalities, and the sports that are more dangerous than football: equestrian riding, female downhill skiing, lacrosse, water polo, and baseball. And then I went to indirect fatalities, and I looked, and I found that rowing, basketball, skiing, water polo, and swimming are all more dangerous than football. And so if we're going to say, well, football has to be banned, then I think it's only right that we say we pretty much have to ban all college sports if we're going to do it based on the risks and the safety. The other thing that I just have to disagree with Mr. Gladwell, and I know this is dangerous territory for me, but he talked about grown men. And to suggest that college football players at the age of 18, 19, 20, 21 are not grown men, that's just not true. Because we'll take 18, 19, 20-year-olds and we'll send them off to Afghanistan or wherever in the world we need them to help protect our country. And those are grown men. And so at the age of majority, at 18, I think that they have the right to make that decision. So those are the things that are maybe against, and I don't think that it's that dangerous. What are the things that are for? Education. Mr. Bissinger said, well, you know, all you get is a scholarship. All you get is a scholarship. If you go to my alma mater, that's a $250,000 plus scholarship. That's the value of that education. So you do get an education. How many scholarship football players are there in this country every year? 23,000. And the surplus from the game of football is used for what? Well, maybe it is for research. Maybe it is for physical plant. But a lot of it also is used for Title IX, for opportunities for women athletes to enjoy scholarships and enjoy educations that they might never have had before. And to suggest that football and sports aren't educating, especially football, aren't educating students, I looked at that too. In the general population, students have a graduation rate of 55% in this country, and it's going down, and it's of grave concern. College football players in the last 25 years have gone from a 60% graduation rate to a 70% graduation rate. So not only are they being educated, they're being educated at a higher and better rate than their peers. For me, the game of football, and I was serious about the lessons of football on an individual basis of teamwork, hard work, perseverance, and tolerance. And I know my partner Jason is going to talk more about that when he has his turn. Those are wonderful lessons that for me were an education in and of themselves. So I hope that you will all vote tonight to not ban college football. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim Green. And here's a reminder of where we are. We are halfway through the opening round of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. I'm John Donvan. We have four debaters, two teams of two, fighting it out over this motion, ban college football. You have heard two of the opening statements, and now on to the third, debating in support of the motion, ban college football, Buzz Bissinger. He is winner of the Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting and author of several bestsellers, including Friday Night Lights. His newest book is called Father's Day. It's due out on Sunday. Ladies and gentlemen, Buzz Bissinger.
Thank you. You know, it seems to me that given that this debate is taking place at a university that is one of the greatest and most innovative in the country that doesn't have football, I think this debate ends right now. Our nation is at a cornerstone. There's no doubt about it. We are questioning everything. Tax rate, rich versus poor. Who are we? What are we in a very intense, the most competitive global economy we have ever faced? And one of the things that we are looking at and must look at, which makes this debate pertinent, is the role of the university. It is pivotal. Questions over course offerings, allocation of resources in a very difficult era as governors are slashing to the bone, dwindling money, rising tuition. And yet, a recent book by two sociologists, Robert Arum and Josipa Roxas, says that basically undergraduates embrace college life and it is shaped and oriented to non-academic endeavors. The amount of study time has gone, and this was by two labor economists, study time in colleges has gone from over 40 hours in the 1960s to 20 hours in the 1980s to currently 13 hours of study time. And I believe that at the top of what has become the university distraction, the distracted university, is football. Is football. It sucks all the air out of the room. The amount of money that coaches make is insulting. It is insulting when a coach is making 5 to 10 to 15 times more than a college president. What does it say? What does it say about the priorities of a university? It says that the head coach runs the school. And make no mistake, that was the tragedy of Joe Paterno. He did run Penn State. He did run Penn State. And I know he ran Penn State because when Graham Spanier went to his house in 2004 and said, Joe, it's time to retire, he threw him out. They never spoke for 10 years. Joe ran that school, and when it was his chance to do what was the morally right thing to do, which was to go to the police, the culture of omerta that surrounds football, he did nothing except harbor a suspected child molester. This is what we're dealing with in football. A few facts. In what they call the Football Bowl subdivision, the big 125 schools, spending per student in those schools, $13,471. Spending per athlete, $91,053. 6.8 times as much for a student athlete. In the famed SEC, 11.6 times as much. It's become a facility arms race. $15.2 billion spent on new athletic facilities, in particular stadiums, between 1995 and 2005. 20% of current spending, that, by the way, is not included in a lot of the revenue statements you'll see in NCAA reports. And that's not from me. That's from Andrew Zimbalist, who is considered the leading sports economic professor in the country from Smith College. 20% of current spending is on facility expansion, which is wonderful, except what happens if these teams stop winning? People will not go. They will not go. From USA Today, June 16th of 2011. More than $470 million. More than $470 million. Most of it in student fees by students who do not play sports went into subsidized college athletic programs, in particular in football. And this is an era, a national trend of declining state support, tuition increases, and salary freezes. How many football programs have cut their budgets? A few did in 2010, but it's back up. It is back up. It is back up. Salaries of coaches. I mentioned it. Average salary for a football coach, $1.47 million. That's up 55% in six seasons. A professor, 1986 to 2007, his salary went up 30%. The college president, 100%. The football coach, 500%. 500%. And I defy both of you to tell me why Urban Meyer deserves of Ohio State $24 million over six seasons. I defy you to tell me that. I defy you to tell me why Mack Brown deserves $5.192 million, not to mention the $850,000 bonus he will get. And I can go down the line, not to mention David Cutcliffe at Duke, which has a terrible football program, who received $1.762 million. And there are all these myths, Character. From CBS SI poll in 2011, 7% of college football players, 7% have criminal records, 7%. 2,837 players, they studied the top 25 programs. At the top of the list, Pitt, 22 players on the team in 2010 have been charged with a crime. Myth, increased alumni giving. Myth, 2005, Robert Frank at the Johnson School of Management at Cornell. Existing empirical literature supports that success in big-time athletics has little, if any, systematic effect on the quality of incoming freshmen and institutions able to attract. That's the one of the things about football, is it attracts better students. It does not. It attracts more applications, but the students are of low caliber. Myth, football gives back. Untrue. Untrue, and I'll go into that later. Graduation rates. Graduation rates. NCAA is the most ridiculous formula. The graduation success rate, now they've included the Ivy League. It's ridiculous. And 69%. And what is worse is that the racial gap between black and white is despicable. I'm done.
Thank you, Buzz Bissinger. Our motion is ban college football. Our motion is ban college football, and our final debater against the motion is Jason Whitlock. Jason is a... Jason is a national columnist with FoxSports.com. He's a contributor to Fox Sports Radio. He lettered as an offensive tackle for Ball State University, and he was the first sports writer to win a National Journalism Award. Ladies and gentlemen, Jason Whitlock.
Tim, if we lose the debate, I should be blamed because I anticipated all their arguments, and if I do it justice, I will... prove how ridiculous their arguments are, or just not ridiculous because Mr. Gladwell and Mr. Bissinger are two of the brightest minds that dabble in sports. I did not mean that dismissively. Trust me, if you've read their work, they do much higher end stuff than just sports, and I'm they're lending their brains to sports occasionally. But, again, I don't mean that. I mean that with all due respect. We need to keep in mind, I will not match Buzz's intensity or passion. I think I can match wits with him and Mr. Gladwell. Keep in mind, Mr. Gladwell is a Canadian. And I'm not playing this for jokes. I'm being serious. We live in a republic, a democracy. Capitalism is our economic system. The thing we value the most is freedom. We're American. And if you believe in freedom, you can't have the free without the dumb. You can't have it. They go hand in hand. Freedom allows you to do dumb things, things we find reprehensible. And I would agree. You can put football right in there with cigarettes, alcohol, porn, everything else, things that we tolerate and enjoy here in America. But you cannot separate them. And everything in America is connected to freedom and to capitalism and to democracy. And so you can't remove our institutions of higher education from capitalism and from freedom. You can't. We don't do that in America. We let capitalism exploit everything, whether we like it or not. And so football has to be tolerated no different than Ronald McDonald. Ronald McDonald has done far more damage to America than any football coach, any of these overpaid coaches that he's talking about. Mr. Vissinger argues rightfully these coaches are overpaid. Ronald McDonald is overpaid. Hugh Hefner's overpaid. Jenna Jameson's overpaid. What Charlie Sheen's overpaid. That's America. Mr. Vissinger argues in the Wall Street Journal and a little bit today that football is removed from the academic experience. He is wrong. People don't understand football. Many football players don't even understand football. But and I mean this respectfully. I'm not playing this for laughs. I'm not trying to be dismissive. Mr. Gladwell, Mr. Vissinger, some of our brightest minds have not participated in football. And many of you in this audience have not participated in football. Football, whether we like it or not, whether you understand it or not when I say it, but football is America. It is the melting pot. College football is the highest level of the melting pot. Football is the Statue of Liberty, college football. Your huddled masses, you're poor, you're tired, people yearning to breathe free. I was one of those kids. Football was my access into the mainstream and a better life. My dad didn't graduate from high school. My mother was a factory worker. I was the first person in my family to go off to college. Football brings the poor and the rich, the black and the white, the Jews and the Gentiles. It brings everybody together, particularly at the college level. Your high school experience, for the most part, is segregated. Your little league experience is segregated. Once you go all the way up to the pros, it's more segregated because football is a game best played, pardon, Tim's an exception, by the most desperate people on the planet. It's like boxing. That's why so many of the football players have hard luck stories in the National Football League. They came from nothing. They had no other choices. They had to be good at football. But on the college level, everybody comes together. And I, personally, played next to, I was a tackle, the guy next to me, right guard, keeping it real, don't laugh. The guy next to me was a bigot. His mom left his dad for a black man, and he couldn't get over it. And he was a bigot. We were very good friends. We're still very good friends. We found common ground through football. College football, the bringing together of this diverse cross-section of people pursuing one goal. If they understood it on college campuses, they would teach college football. They would come and study college football and learn things so that I'm a part of the media. I watch our major broadcast media, and I watch the clueless, people that don't have the diversity of experience that I had through college football and through life, and I watch them consistently tear this country apart. I watch them do it with George Zimmerman, O.J. Simpson, Rodney King, whatever the big media story, Barack Obama, consistently tear this country apart. The reason why, and if people have ever read my columns and understood my perspective, the reason why I never lose faith in America is because of my college football experience. I have seen people of different backgrounds overcome tremendous differences to compete for one goal. That's what we allegedly are trying to do here in America. I think the argument to ban college football is being argued by well-intentioned people who don't clearly understand the sport. America is imperfect. The Statue of Liberty does not promise perfection. Our Constitution doesn't promise perfection. We pursue perfection. College football needs to be reshaped, remade, less games, less practice, less padded practice.
Jason Whitlock.
Share some of the money with the coaches.
Jason,
it does not need to be banned.
Your time is up. Let's give him a round of applause. Thank you, Jason Whitlock. And that concludes round one of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. And now we go on to round two, which is where the debaters address each other directly and also answer questions from you in the audience and from me. We have two teams of two who are arguing out this motion, ban college football, arguing for the motion. We've heard from Buzz Bissinger and Malcolm Gladwell. They're arguing that college football is something like a kind of toxic spill in the society. They make two kinds of arguments. One, the medical argument, that it abuses the players, hurts them physically, literally is rattling the brains in their heads. And a financial argument, that college football twists universities' priorities so that these schools are less in the education business than they are in the football business, that in these on these campuses, football becomes a distraction. The team arguing against the motion, Jason Whitlock and Tim Greenfield, they both played in college, and they are arguing that, football is a great unifier for the players and for schools. For the schools, they provide identity and loyalty. For the players as individuals, they provide character and discipline and a shot at education that many of them may not have had, and they also dispute almost all of the medical claims made by the other side. So we want to have them mix it up now, and I want to go to the side arguing against the motion. Your opponents are making a very broad philosophical argument that college football as it stands now has no place on university campuses because it makes the schools more about football than it does about education, that this actually causes harm. You make the argument that it's good for the players. They're making the argument, maybe so, but it's bad for everybody else because it just messes up what the school is supposed to be about, messes up the finances, and they put this down to a very specific question. Why should these coaches be making millions of dollars and millions of dollars more than the president of the universities?
Why shouldn't they be making millions of dollars more? Why? I mean, this is America, and Jason said it. This is a country where we allow pop stars and rappers and hedge fund managers, we allow people to make whatever the market determines that it should make. And I don't understand why we would begrudge anyone
any amount of anything. Defense, that hedge fund managers are just as bad? I mean, at this point, can we declare
what I'm saying is I wouldn't begrudge you the revenues from your wonderfully successful books or Buzz. You know, Friday Night Lights, we're all big fans. I don't begrudge you that. Whatever you get is what you get. And whatever the market determines, that's what you earn.
Buzz Bissinger.
I understand, but first of all, these are not-for-profit institutions. Second of all, athletic departments are notoriously bureaucracy-heavy. Notorious. Ohio State has an athletic department of 478 people, which is twice as much as the English department at Ohio State. So let's face it, it ain't about capitalism because they're nonprofit institutions. They're not responsible to stockholders. Plus, the Knight Foundation, which has studied football and sports more than any entity in the country in the past 20 years, has said there is absolutely no correlation between a winning record and the amount of a coach's salary.
You talk about what's wrong,
Tim Green,
with football, with academics, right? You talked about,
yes,
13 hours a week studying. Guess how many hours a week football players study?
20.
40 hours a week.
I talked about the graduation rate. You talk about the bureaucracy and the money that's spent on football. Maybe that money, maybe the general student population.
40 hours a week doing
40 hours a week studying, 40 hours a week playing football from the NCAA.
I think, first of all, I think
you know, Buzz, let's not get into where we got stuff, where you got your numbers, where I got mine. Where'd you get your
numbers? Buzz, hang on a second and just let
I've cited everything.
Buzz, hang on a second and I'll come back to you.
Okay.
Go ahead, Tim. Finish
your point. So, football's doing a good job. They're doing a good job educating their players. They're educating them at a better and a higher rate than the general population. Maybe academia should take a page out of the playbook from the football program.
Malcolm Gladwell, your opponents made the point that football players' rate of graduation is actually increasing. Can you take that on?
Well, first of all, that's small comfort if you get a degree in the short term and a massive brain injury in the long term. But secondly,
you can't say that.
The other thing that almost everything that our two opponents said, I agree with. If they simply substituted in another sport for football, right? The issue is not that football does all kinds of wonderful things. Of course it does. Do football players graduate? Of course they do. Do they learn all kinds of wonderful character things? Absolutely. But do we have to bash them over the head in order to communicate those virtues? Why can't they row? Why can't they kick a soccer ball?
They won't generate enough money to sustain themselves. And again, I just want to go back to...
Wait, it's about money now? That they have to get hit over the head because they can't get money otherwise?
In terms of funding all the other sports you're talking about that you like, yes, they do have to get hit over the head on Saturdays to pay for that. Absolutely.
Jason, you're...
To pay for the rowing team and the soccer team and all the other sports that no one cares about.
Your argument is a perfect argument for why football should not be at academic institutions. Make it into a minor league system then. You'll get the same benefits that you're talking about. The melting pot, by the way, the melting pot also, I think, includes Latinos and Asian Americans. And if you can name four Jews who played football, you win the debate.
Tim Green.
And I can name you the only one, which was Sid Luckman from Columbia.
Tim Green.
Malcolm. I'm talking to Malcolm now. I'll talk to you out back later on.
No, I'm going to kick your ass.
And I will defy you, Buzz Bissinger.
Tim Green.
Malcolm, you know, all due respect, you're talking about all this damage that's done to the brain, okay? Show me the studies. Show me proof. Because what I'm looking at right here is indirect fatalities. You said, why couldn't they be rowing? Per 100,000 student-athletes in rowing, how many indirect fatalities a year? 16. How many in football? 2.2. Wait, so why are we going to let them row? You got to look at numbers. You can't just throw out there and say, oh, it does all this damage, 100 Gs, that's not correct. All this damage to the head. Look, if there is long-term damage to the brain, okay, and maybe I'm living proof of it, but if there is long-term damage to the brain, I'm the first one to say, you know, boy, maybe we should look at it. But do we eliminate all these other sports as well?
Yeah, Malcolm.
No, here's the thing. At that moment in your remarks, when you were comparing fatality rates between sports, I was incredulous. I'm not talking about fatalities on the field. We're talking about long-term health consequences that show up 20 and 30 years later.
Show me the studies.
Here's why we don't know what the long-term consequences of football are. Because you have to shoot yourself and have an autopsy before we know whether you have CTE in your brain.
I think you can't
diagnose it until you're dead.
I think, though, we're so caught up in the Junior Seau, Dave Durison, and the aberrations. I don't think that's the norm. I don't think that, and yes, they make news and we can write about them and people will be interested in it. I think what we're arguing, Malcolm, is that's not the case for the overwhelming majority of people that play football. And because the overwhelming majority stop at high school, and then the next big group stops at college. And now we have some examples of a few pro athletes that have had these amazing problems. We haven't seen the studies that say college athletes significant number have these problems.
Jason, the two of you who have played, I want to ask you, I mean,
given the arguments made on the other side, you've both probably hit your head a bunch of times. I mean, they're arguing you're two very successful guys. You might be a lot more successful if you hadn't played football. But do you actually worry about the statistics that Malcolm is citing, since you both have played the game? Do you worry about it?
I have concerns, but this is the cell phone syndrome, folks. 10 years ago, people said, cell phones, next to the head, it's brain cancer, cell phones, brain cancer. And everyone said, oh my gosh, cell phones, brain cancer. And I'm walking around, my wife's saying, you can't use your cell phone, you can't hold it next to your head. And I started to believe it. I'm like, yeah, I got to use my speakerphone, I got to use the thing. Guess what? They've done studies, long-term studies, and they found there is no correlation between cell phones and brain cancer.
Wait.
So until
name
you
name the last
until
time you, someone shot themselves in the chest because of cell phone
Malcolm,
use.
Malcolm, you're taking. You no, know no, what you're doing.
I am
you're
not
taking. You're taking, as Jason said, an aberration.
I did because I use AT&T.
There are 64. There are 64 players
AT&T.
In the National Football League who are currently suing the league over their brain injuries. Right. That is the thin end of the wedge. We don't know how large the group of affected players is. And the question for us is, until we know what the extent of the medical damage is, what is the appropriate position to take as custodians of the personal and intellectual development of young people?
Buzz Bissinger.
Well, have the studies been definitive? No. However,
thank you.
But wait a sec. Of BU has studied the brains of 44 players who died early either because of Alzheimer's, suicide, which is a very, very complex issue. I agree with Jason about why Junior Sow died. We don't know. But in each of those 44 brains, they found advanced CTE. Their brains were shriveled. The first case was Andre Waters, who shot himself at the age of 43. Forget suicide. When they looked at his brain, they said he had the brain of a 67-year-old man. And you know how Andre Waters played. He probably suffered 25 to 30 concussions during his career. So you have 44 cases in which there were advanced signs of CTE in players who either had Alzheimer's, early Alzheimer's, or died.
There are studies.
Tim Green.
And there are 6,000 former NFL players over the last 20 years. And you're talking about
1,000 are filing suit.
Take 6,000 clergymen, 6,000 university professors,
6,000
bus drivers.
But Tim, there's a class action suit.
I don't want to be this cynical, Buzz. I don't want to be this cynical, but this is also America. We sue over everything. You get broke and desperate. Seriously, I've written about this in the past. Remember we had this whole deal about the old NFL players not being taken care of by the current players? And I called it the old NFL. They want reparations because they're jealous of how much money the current players are making.
Do you honestly think that?
Absolutely.
Tim, no, let me ask you. You played.
Is suing a good thing like cigarettes, porn, and football?
No, but it's just what we do. Everybody, if you can't earn it, you'll sue somebody
Malcolm
to
Gladwell.
Get it. That's America.
Malcolm Gladwell.
I think all of you are sidestepping the crucial fact here, and that is, yes, this is a complex topic. Yes, this is clearly a heated topic. Yes, we don't know what the full extent of this damage is. The issue is, what do we do at our institutions of higher learning in the interim, right?
What
is the prudent step? And you guys seem to take the position that until we have definitive proof of just how many people are being killed, we shouldn't do anything.
The appropriate step to take is to walk things back. They're playing too many games. I agree. They should walk it back to 11 games. The coaches are earning too much. They should share some with the players. They should have less padded practices and less contact. They should walk things back until we figure it out. You don't just jump to banning.
Right.
Just, we would have banned cell phones 10 years ago.
But you're yielding.
Neither of you.
You're actually yielding a lot of their points that there's a real problem there. So you do.
No one denies there's a problem.
There was a problem back in 1976.
So the head injuries are real, and the money problem is real.
Look at helmets. Helmets have got better in 1976. The rules changed in 1976. Absolutely. I mean, we're not saying, just go carry on as usual. Yeah, change the rules a little bit. Continue to modify. Have the strike zone. No helmet to helmet hits. Hang on, Buzz.
I'm listening.
Yeah, modify the rules. Pay the players. Keep making the helmets safer and safer, which they are. Do everything we can to protect. But don't ban things.
This is America. We don't ban things. People can burn the flag. We don't ban that. You don't ban college football.
Buzz Bissinger.
But the greater issue, which neither of you have answered, is what is the academic purpose of football on a university campus, and why are we the only nation in the world that looks to universities to provide a primary source of athletic entertainment? You talk about kids getting, you know what the graduation rate of football players should be? 100%. Do you know why? They get a free scholarship. Not only that.
It's not free, Buzz. It's not free. You work
Tim,
for it.
I didn't interrupt you. Do not interrupt me. They get a scholarship. Beyond that, you have the Phil Knights and the University of Texas. Phil Knight builds a $44 million Taj Mahal academic support center for student athletes. Why doesn't he build it for the average student? They get tutors. They get every ancillary benefit. Okay, and the graduation rate, and by the way, the federal rate is 56% because the NCAA has all sorts of gimmicks called as graduation
success
rate.
Buzz, this is landing well. I want to let him respond.
I'll concede that instead of 55, it's 56. All right?
Tim, take on the question. Why he's talking about a great imbalance and disparity and where the investment goes.
The money goes to where people pay for. Look, this is America. People want winners. They want the programs to win, and they'll pay for it. I agree with Jason. The coaches should split some of that salary, create a stipend for the players. I'm in full agreement. Again, look, you guys can't just say, well, football needs to change. There's bad things about it. Yeah, there are. There are some things that are dangerous. It's unsettling. Are we going to not allow – no student should allow to be driving motor vehicles.
That is 100 times more dangerous.
I want to ask Buzz this one second. We have to protect our youth.
I just have to go back – as a Canadian, I have to go back to something you just said. When you said, this is America, we don't ban things. Are you sure you don't ban things in America?
You want me to say this is North America?
Let's think for a moment about something that we've banned recently in America. Gay marriage? Heard about it? We ban things all the time, Tim.
It's not banned in New York State, and I think it will cease to be banned everywhere in this country.
Jason Whitlock.
Buzz, I wanted to ask you, and I don't know the answer to this.
It's certainly banned on football programs.
Oh, right. I would, Buzz.
Don't tell, Buzz.
Would you agree that Booby probably required more support? Did he deserve an opportunity? If he had been good enough to go on to college, would he not deserve perhaps a little more support academically to get through school? I mean, considering his background, and Booby was a great character in Buzz's Friday Night Lights book.
Because would he have gotten more support? Yes.
I mean, would you say the kid deserved it, though? Wouldn't that be a good thing?
If he effectively used it, sure. But I think they are given that support to pass them through and make sure that they are
having experience.
And Jason, the graduation rates for African American players
complex
is
reasons,
horrible.
Buzz.
Well, wait,
complex
let me
reasons.
Just give you. Let's talk facts. Florida State, whites 93%, blacks 44%. Arkansas,
Buzz,
80%.
If they
let me
broke
finish.
It down,
80% because I actually did some work on this instead of riff.
Home, I bet you you'd erase the racial disparity. Kids that come from two-parent homes, regardless of color, are more apt to graduate from college than kids that come from single-parent homes. It's not necessarily a race issue.
But you're completely dismissing the racial disparity. You're completely dismissing it.
I'm not dismissing
it.
I'm going to quickly throw
two numbers at you. Since 1984, the graduation rate for football players across the board has increased 10%. That's a good thing. It's a good trend. In the last 10 years, so that's 25 years. In the last 10 years, there's been a 15% increase in African-American football players alone. So it's not perfect, but guess what? Against the general population, which is going down, the football players are going up. And maybe it does require a little bit more money to get them there with the tutors and the academic centers, but they are earning it. They are paying for it with their efforts in practice and in the games on Saturday afternoons.
Buzz, do you have something further to say on that? Do you have something to move that forward? Because I think you've stated your case. I want to put a question to this side because there's something about your argument that I realize I'm not clear on. Do you believe that athletics have a place, a formal place in education, period, in the same way, for example, that music
painting, performance, may. Do those things belong on campus? Is athletics part of an education in the college level?
Absolutely.
Malcolm Gladwell. How does it fit in then?
For all of the reasons I think that were so articulately stated by Mr. Green and Mr. Wetlock. They are opportunities to build character, to learn teamwork, to bring people from different backgrounds together. All of that's true.
So you're saying it's, Buzz, you're saying it's the way in which football is happening now. In other words, if you went back 50 years...
Well, I mean, it's the way... No, because there is the myth of the student athlete is a myth. In the early 1900s, when the Ivy League ruled football, you know what they did? They hired these kids. They gave them a share of the gate receipts. They never went to school, and they were not expected to go to school. This is a myth propagated by people like Grantland Rice, who raised these players to biblical proportions, and Ronald Reagan playing win one for the Gipper. Now, in 1950, the average SAT score of an athlete was 18 points below the average student. It is now exponentially lower. And I'm not sure, and Tim played, but what does
I just want to finish up the point that Malcolm started. So where does athletics in general and football specifically fit into the process of education?
Football does not fit into the process of a college education, not when we rank 14th in the world.
But rowing does?
Rowing may to some degree. They could all be sports. They could all be club sports. Honestly, honestly, we are so athletic, obsessed. And for what? For what? I mean, the number of scholarships that we give out, does Penn State really need 29 varsity sports? Does it? Is it right that the single biggest individual contribution given was $70 million for establishment of a Division I hockey program at a time when tuition is going up? And I imagine a lot of those students are leaving because they can no longer afford school, unlike your football player.
Tim Green.
I don't understand why opportunities for student athletes makes you so angry. I don't understand why you begrudge college athletes scholarships, especially when part of your own argument is that these football players and basketball players are being exploited because of the revenues that they generate. Those revenues that they generate are used to pay for, and you talked about the expenses that are there, the expenses that's all part of the show, and they pay for it dearly. They work very hard, and you do take risks. You don't take risks, you know, any more than a lot of other sports. You take less risk than riding a bicycle or driving a car, but you do take risks and you put forth tremendous effort. And from those efforts, we're in agreement. You should get something back. So which one is it, Buzz? I mean, do you want players to football players to have the opportunities of education for as compensation for their efforts, or don't you? You're mixing messages.
All right, I want to go to questions from the audience, but first I want to tell you, so we are now in the question and audience section of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. I'm John Donvan of Intelligence Squared U.S. We have four debaters, two teams of two, debating this motion, ban college football. And how this will work, if you raise your hand, I'll call on you. Just wait till a microphone comes to you. And you're being filmed, too, so please stand up so that we can see you. Hold the microphone about a fist's distance from your mouth so that it can hear you clearly. We'd appreciate it if you could state your name. If you're a member of the media or a blogger, we'd appreciate that. And I really urge you to make your question a question, and you'll recognize it as such because a question mark naturally goes at the end of it. And try to keep it on topic. You know, there's a lot of places we can go with this. We really want the question to get these guys talking about in a way that helps you make your decision on whether to ban college football or not to. Sir, in the far back, you're wearing a black sweater with horizontal white stripes. I can't see you, by the way, if you're not in the lit area. So if you can't see the hands on your wristwatch, I can't see you. But if you want to come down forward to the lit area, then I might be able to call on you. Sir, go ahead.
Yes, my name is Rick Levy. I'm not a member of the media, but I do have a question regarding the health of the football player. With the exposure in the New Orleans Saints for pay for injuring players, is this, in your experience, happening in college as well. Are college players being rewarded for injuring their opponents?
Which brings us to the large area of corruption, which we haven't discussed greatly. Which side would like to take that first? Because we can take it to either side.
I would think not. But you know, if you want to talk corruption, if you want to talk academic cheating, let's answer
the question first.
No, but corruption in college sports.
Let's answer his question.
I said I don't think that any coach or player, there is a bounty system. Right. For any college program.
However, unlike everything else, you're right.
Let's go to teams on
probation. Let me answer his question.
Buzz, I do
happen to know that in the National Football League, what happened with the New Orleans Saints was an aberration. In my 8 years of playing in the NFL, in my 10 years as a broadcaster for Fox Sports and knowing players intimately throughout the league, I never heard of anything quite like it, neither did anyone else. By the way, people knew about what was happening with the New Orleans Saints for the past 3 years, and they were warned over and over again, we hear this, you guys better stop, this is absolutely crazy. It's crazy, it's wrong, it was despicable, it's an aberration, it doesn't happen in pro football, other places, and it certainly has no place, and it has not happened to my knowledge in the college.
Okay, game. Now you know if anybody wants to stand up and say, Buzz, what about corruption? He's ready to go.
What Tim said, who was in a position to know the best, was both eloquent and right and reassuring. Tim played pro football. I mean that.
Malcolm Gladwell.
However, let's talk about teams on probation since 2009. Georgia Tech, LSU, Michigan, UNC, Alabama, Ohio State, New Mexico, USC, Florida International, Alabama State, West Virginia, Boise State, Hobart. Nebraska, Tennessee. How many is that? I know you'll say that's anecdotal. Academic cheating. Florida State, 61 players took online courses where they received answers beforehand or did no work. The team had to vacate wins during those seasons. UNC, which has been invoked. All these football players, for some reason, were taking
Buzz,
Swahili.
I want to ring the bell. You guys want to respond? Jason Whitlock.
I hate to go back to it, but...
How can you justify that?
If you have freedom, you're going to have corruption, man.
Oh, well, that's a good thing.
That's part of...
You should become head of Citibank, for God's sake.
Probably... I should have taken a job on Wall Street.
Yeah. You should have.
It's dangerous to take. This is throughout sports at every level, right? And the more focus and the more attention we pay to it, the more we are interested and drawn to the people who misbehave. But the vast majority of college football players, you said 7% of college football players have been arrested. That's probably about the average in the college male population.
You're talking about
all these people that have. You got to add the numbers up. If you've got 30 that broke the rules, how many hundreds do you have who didn't break the rules? If you've got a handful of players who committed suicide and then had serious brain damage, which that makes sense, right? And that horrible tragedy, how many didn't commit
Buzz
suicide?
Buzz is going to be back next month banning marriage because of infidelity.
Let me come to another question. Right down in the front there, very first row. And remember to stand up, please. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Claire Andre. My question is, it's been kind of black and white, either ban or not ban, but what would you suggest as ways or not suggest as ways to encourage to...
Well, can I twist your question just a tad? Because I've been wondering the same thing. Would you be okay with putting it this way,
absolutely,
to this side? Is there a reformable version of college football that you guys would accept? Because they actually are talking about, let's make some changes.
Their suggestions be as reforms.
Okay. What would be, let's do it that way. What would your suggestions be? I've answered that previously.
I think a shorter season, less practice time, sharing the wealth with the athletes would be some, you know, I think in my day we played 11 games. Now they play 14 or 15 games. It's ridiculous. It's complete and total exploitation. You get a 10-game season is completely appropriate. You go to a bowl game, you play an 11th. You know, just the more contact, the more likely you are to get injured. So less games would be
Let's see if there's anything else on their list.
I think that the colleges should continue to work and with the NFL to continue to research and find better and better equipment to protect the players and to continue to kind of tinker with the rules, create the strike zone for the quarterback, eliminate helmet to helmet. You're never going to eliminate it completely, but have a strict liability code where players who do hit helmet to helmet, you know, remove them from the game, suspend them in the next time. I mean, make it very serious.
Would any of those steps make a difference to you in your conviction to ban college football?
No.
Why? I would.
Go ahead, Buzz.
This is a very radical solution. It's got all sorts of problems. I understand that, but people are talking about universities. You license out your name, and basically you're creating a de facto subsidiary. The universities are out of it. You still call it USC. You still call it whatever. You still call it Nebraska. You still call it Syracuse, but it's out of the university system. The university gets a licensing fee. They negotiate it. It basically is a minor league system that is separate. Or, you know what? You get rid of it. You don't penalize the players. You know who the biggest villain in this is? The NFL. The NFL does not pay a single dime for what is the greatest boondoggle and farm system ever created.
And Malcolm,
so make the
Malcolm,
NFL pony up with a developmental league.
Malcolm, the other part of their many of their suggestions are related to making the game safer. So can you take that on?
Well, the thing that I would be happy with is intramural flag football. Because if you think about it, here's a chance for kids from all kinds of different backgrounds to come together to learn to play together and hard work and perseverance. I get all misty-eyed thinking about it.
Now, wait a second. Malcolm, no offense, aren't you talking about gay marriage?
Sir, in the black sweater in third row. Just wait for the mic, please. 1 second. It's coming from your right-hand side.
My name's Herb Antelak. I'm a sports fan. I'm just an average person. If you're going to ban football, then you'd better start banning basketball and all of the other sports because they just have the same problems as football. This country isn't about banning. This is about building.
Can you turn this to a question?
Oh, sure.
Okay, thanks.
Besides the monetary amount, why do you want to ban football?
Well, I mean, you know, if at this point I haven't made the point, then I'm really screwed. because, first of all, and I didn't mention this, 43% of the top 125 programs lose money on football. Now, how any program that
you really
loses
gave him
money,
an opening here to kid.
Any so 43% lose money. Why do they maintain football programs? Tim and I talked about this yesterday. Because for some,
I asked why do you want to ban because it has nothing outside of money
because it has nothing to do with the academic. I'm amazed. Aren't you concerned
to do with the academics?
It does has nothing
it provides, to do. Wait. Education.
I have to shut you down because we only got four seats up here. But thank you.
Can I ask?
Thank you. Yeah, Tim Green would like a chance to respond to that.
In your farm team system, you know, where every school gets to have their own farm team, do the players get to go to class? Do they get an education at the same time?
I would think you would give the play. You know, it's an unwieldy mechanism. I think you give the players that option. If they want to be called student athletes and they're actually going to class and they're interested in getting education, fine. If they don't want to go, don't make them, because I have a feeling that most of them probably don't want to go.
Those would be athlete students.
Now, and that's why Stanford has an easy course list. That's why UNC has an easy course list.
Well, you know, that you got to quantify that. But why do you think, if they don't want to go, why do you think 70% are graduating as opposed to 56% of everyone else?
Well, I said because in many cases.
Let him answer. Yeah. Why are so many football players graduating if they don't want their degree and they don't want to go to class and they don't want to go to school?
Let him answer the question.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Buzz Bissner.
Because it's a game, and because the NCAA knows and college football knows that we're under a lot of scrutiny for our graduation rates, so they push them through. Why does Stanford have an easy class list that football players, here are the classes you take? Why, Tim? Why? Why would they?
I know,
why would UNC?
I have
But why?
I have alum at Syracuse
who had, you know, easier class loads, easier degrees than I did with an English literature degree or a biosciences degree. I mean, a physics degree, an engineering degree. I mean, some people get their degrees, and I don't want to disparage any other degrees, but there are, you know, there are all kinds of things. You know, if you get a degree in business or a degree in the liberal arts, say an English degree.
Let's go to another question, ma'am, right in the aisle there. Yeah, there you go.
Hi, I also am just an average person and a sports fan. My name's Ashley. There is a scholar out of Duke University who has correlated the top 25 universities in the world, 22 of them are in the U.S., with the big sports programs having an effect on bringing the community together and getting behind, even if it doesn't directly contribute to the bottom line of the university or show honor. And that's one of the reasons that even though our recent numbers haven't been great, our overall numbers of top universities are indeed higher.
So what is your question?
So the question is, do you feel that that holds any weight? One of the questions that you've posed several times is, what is the purpose of football and other athletics in higher education, and if it's overall to bring our universities to the top of the line, does that hold any weight?
Is your question, what about the, and this side has made this case, the beneficial effect on bringing a university together, giving it an identity, giving it a sense of purpose and unity? Do you think that's real? And you're asking this side if they think it's real and if they think it's worth it.
Right.
Malcolm Gladwell.
The thing that I always come back to that has mystified me throughout this whole debate is, what on earth is so special about football? I mean, if 50 years ago or 75 years ago, the major colleges had all decided that they would compete at Monopoly, and that somehow Monopoly had gotten lodged in the imagination of the American scholar Monopoly player, and that they started to give out scholarships for Monopoly players, and then the Monopoly coaches earned millions of dollars, and they built large stadia, which thousands of people would come to watch the Monopoly players compete against each other. And then suddenly it was observed that Monopoly had gotten out of control, and we said, maybe it's time for us to turn our back on Monopoly. I can imagine the two of you just standing up there and saying, no, there's something magical
about this
game. My point is, there's nothing. It's just a game. Replace it with another game.
But her question persists that she, whether it makes no sense to you or not, her question is, she feels that this effect is there and is real. And I want to ask you if you think it's there and if it's real and if it's worth
my
it.
My point
go ahead.
My point is, it's probably real, but you could get it with something else. Monopoly.
Buzz.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it's like anything in life. If a team is winning and successful, with certain exceptions like a Texas or an LSU or an Alabama, if you're winning, students go, alumni go. If you're losing, they tend not to go. I'm not sure if you're saying that the 25 biggest, best universities in the world have superb football programs, because I don't think that's correct. I just don't, because on that list is Harvard, Yale, Penn, University of Chicago, and last time I checked, the Ivy League sucks. But anyway, it does bring students together, but however, there was a study done at the University of Oregon by several economists that was in the National Economic Review that showed when the Oregon football team was winning, men's grades went down significantly. They did. You might think it's a laugh, but it's not. By an equivalent of 27 SAT points, they studied half as much and they drank twice as more. So that's what football does. It makes you drunk and stupid.
Tim Green. Malcolm, you asked what's so special about football, and I want to seriously try to answer that, because I'm a dad, and I encourage my kids. If they don't want to be athletes and they don't want to play sports, that's fine. They can do whatever they want to do. But if they want to be athletes, I encourage them. I've coached a lot of sports, and I've coached football. And the thing that I love about all sports is one of the things Jason said, teamwork, bringing people together for a common cause, working together, learning that even if you're not the most important part of a team, you can make a difference and help that team win, learning that you have to get along with people even if you don't like them if you have a common goal. The perseverance element of sports, and I think the thing that I love most about football is, and this is what I say to the kids I coach, I say,
and the parents. I say, you're going to, when you go out into the world, you are going to be knocked down. You're going to be knocked down, and guess what? It's not always going to be fair. And sometimes you're going to be cheated. And sometimes people are going to do things to you that they shouldn't do. And all this happens in a game of football. And it happens in a very confined, intense experience. And I'm telling you that as a football player and football players, you learn to get knocked down and get back up.
Tim, that doesn't beat the monopoly argument because...
No, seriously, because
you're talking about what's good for the football player. And they're talking about what's good for the rest of the university.
I thought he meant what's so good about football as a player.
But look, I mean, football is a part of the American soul. It goes to, frankly, our celebration of we like being a violent, you know, hard-assed country. What I resent is that why don't you get all those things in the school newspaper? When you put on a play, when you're in the orchestra, you get all these things, perseverance, caring. Football players don't really have to deal with people. They're told by 23 coaches what to do. And all those pursuits have much more long-lived academic pursuits.
Jason,
you have to write.
Jason,
you have to learn critical thinking.
I think on a college campus, a lot of those endeavors that you're talking about, and some of them I participated in my school newspaper, again, those tend to be segregated endeavors that don't reach the cross-section of people that football does. And, you know, that's unfortunate, but it's the American reality, and football is the one thing on the field and even in the stands that seems to bring America together across a lot of different backgrounds.
Buzz Bissinger.
Henry Gates, Sports Illustrated, 1981, and we all know who he is, and I think we respect him, obviously. The blind pursuit of attainment in sports is having a devastating effect on our people. Imbued with a belief that our principal avenue is to face and is to profit through sport, far too many black kids treat basketball courts and football fields as if they were classrooms in an alternate school system. That's Henry Gates. Henry Gates. Now, Henry Gates also, and then I'll stop. Henry Gates, he went back to his hometown. He asked people, how many black pro athletes do you think there were? The guesses were wild. 500,000, 50,000. But what he was distressed by, no one believed him when he said, there are 12 times more black lawyers than pro athletes, 20 times more dentists, and 15 times more doctors. So I frankly think that you are selling a bill of goods to inner city kids that athletics is the way out because there are a lot of other ways out.
Jason, Jason Whitlock. There's
many.
Jason Whitlock.
Because it's America and because of freedom, you have to take responsibility for yourself. And so, trust me, having gone through the athletic and academic experience, Ball State University and every other university that my friends attended, they put all the academic goodies right on the table for you to take. And sometimes they put you in a, you know, get your head and try to stuff the academic. It's up to you to open your mouth and take it. That's America. And so these issues that we're trying to reduce to black and white sometimes are far more complicated, and it has to do with, for me, I tried to quit college football. My parents wouldn't allow it, would not allow it.
Why did you want to quit?
Because it was hard, and me and my coach didn't get along, and I had a big mouth. And I tried to quit, and my parents were like, good luck, buddy, you're on your own. And luckily, I had those kind of parents. They wouldn't let me quit. I played with a lot of guys that didn't have those kind of parents or didn't have parents. And so we're blaming institutions a lot of times for things that a foundation with a kid has to be established from birth all the way up until the point you hand them over to the institution. And if that foundation is not there, if that support system is not there, you're going to fail. That's America. And so it's we can demonize the universities and the institutions. But, you know, there's clearly a breakdown in family throughout America that is most acute in the African-American community, and it contributes to a lot of these problems that Mr. Bissinger's talking about.
Okay, I want to do a break to we're going to take a quick break. Now the quick break is over. And I just want to ask you to give us a round of applause to lead me back into it. Thanks. So we are in the question and answer section of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. I'm John Donvan. We have four debaters, two against two, who are arguing it out over this motion, ban college football. We're doing questions from the audience, front row. It makes me nervous when I see that you've written out your question. I hope it's like only
Jason
four
Matrakos.
Lines. No, go start again, please. Sorry.
Jason Matrakos, not a member of the media. Question for Jason Whitlock, actually. You've been talking a lot about freedom and American values, capitalism, and so forth. I think we can all agree that college football is not, and pro football is not, a free labor market. People have to play for 3 years in the NCAA before they can be eligible for the draft. The fact that there is a draft is a little bit ridiculous. I think most labor economists would agree. My question to you is, would you do away with these restrictions on freedom for the players, number one? And number two, would college football exist if you did?
I would not do away with them because, you know, I am pro restraints on freedom within reason. And so, no, I actually think it's for the players' best benefit to go on and participate in college football. I'm not for, you know, capital. We need a system of checks and balances throughout our society, and so
I'm really confused. I've just been listening to you for the last half hour going about freedom and dumbing, and all of a sudden now you're not for freedom anymore.
No, I am for freedom, but
except when you're not.
You know it. No, that's why we have government and rules and regulations, and there are restraints on freedom. We can't kill each other.
Well, Jason, let me ask you this, and no offense, you definitely had concussions when you played. I'm convinced of that. But anyway, I know that was inappropriate. All right,
that was a good joke. Buzz and I are friends.
Anyway, I was doing so
really?
Well up until then.
Yeah.
Buzz plays.
Are you
rough,
in favor then of an antitrust exemption, as many labor economists are who study sports, in which no head coach gets more than $400,000 a year, which is a lot of money? Are you in favor of that?
$400,000, I don't know if that would be my limit, but yeah, I'm for. I wish Congress or, you know, our government would step in and put some restraints on the NCAA and college football.
And let's face it, the only reason that three-year rule is in effect is because, and I think Tim will agree, you need that amount of time to develop as a football player
right.
to be ready for the pros. So that's the only reason. You know, it's what the NFL wants. And basketball, which frankly, major college basketball is in worse shape than football because of the 1 year and out. You know, the five starting players at Kentucky, all of them freshmen, are leaving school. So, you know, everything is done basically for the sake either of money or so-called branding or the pros.
Sir, did you come all the way down from the back? You've earned your question.
The question is actually... My name is Vince Percacci. I'm not a member of the media. It's actually to Mr. Whitlock, and it's on the topic of freedom. But if you do have a ban, how do you craft legislation that would make the rest of us feel somewhat uncomfortable about the overreaching...
setting a precedent that could be used to ban... basketball next.
Exactly. Exactly.
That they decide to.
Yeah,
they don't
it's
like.
That's and it's the message from the other side is we don't like to ban things, even though we do ban things. It doesn't. Right. It always smells
so
bad.
How do you properly craft legislation
can you take
to
on
this?
Take on? You're talking about a slippery slope, obviously.
Tim has played football. He has spoken, I think, very eloquently about why it is a special game. It is a special game. I love football. I do not think it has any academic purpose, and.
Yeah, but he's
but
asking
wait,
about other all the
team,
other
sports. But, you know, you do it. You do it. The University of Chicago, which was in the Big Ten, and Jay Berwanger had won the Heisman Trophy 6 years earlier in the Big Ten, Robert Hutchins said, you know what, this serves absolutely no academic purpose. no academic purpose. And he said, you know, I know a lot of students at my school who can win 12 letters but don't know how to write one. And you know what? They got rid of it. They got rid of it. Schools can get rid of it. BU got rid of it. Northeastern got rid of it. Schools get rid of it.
Chicago, how do you do it globally for the entire country? Do you have to have federal government come in and say everybody is banning football programs?
Look, people, you know, people can sue. They can do this. They can do that. I think college presidents gets the problem is with those salaries is they're terrified of head coaches. They're terrified of college coaches. They know at the big schools they bring in a lot of bucks.
But Buzz, you're giving the reasons not to do it. But what are the reasons?
You know what you do? You ban it. College presidents ban it, and then let people sue, and let you know. Then it takes. Two weeks ago, at
the University of Florida, they shut down their computer science department and they added $2 million a year to their athletic budget, bringing the football program's share of that budget to $78 million. Now, they didn't think of the banning of computer science at the University of Florida as setting a dangerous precedent.
All right, let's hear from the other
side. So if that's the case, I'm not so worried about the football.
I mean, Tim Green.
Why can't we, to Jason's point about freedoms, why can't Florida spend their money on one thing instead of another? Why can't the University of Chicago discontinue football and focus on academics? Why can't we choose? Why can't we choose? And if a football program is losing money and a school wants to discontinue it, well, why don't they? Why don't they? They don't because somewhere along the line, some benefit is inuring to that university, and that's why they do it. And I just don't understand why you would say, well, let's ban it. If it's so unproductive, if it's so counterproductive to everything that's going on, it would ban itself.
It's not going to ban itself because the amount of money that is now involved that has been poured in that certainly wasn't there in the 60s by ESPN and CBS is so enormous that it's just going to create a bigger and bigger monster. And I guess, I don't know, call me silly. These are difficult times for this country. We can put our head in the sand and sing the national anthem and say everything's going to be great and we can believe in myths. A great country changes. There was no China in the 1960s that was competing. There was no India. There was no South Korea. And call me naive, I really do think that these universities have to be almost exclusively about education. And one other thing, you asked about getting rid of sports. I'll tell you why it wouldn't be a bad idea. Because then, you know, that's actually the best argument for keeping football. You keep football, you keep basketball, you get rid of all the other sports that they pay for, so that money at least goes into the general fund so the average student is getting something out of it.
Do you want to add something? Because he had a long run.
Well, I mean, that's another debate, whether Tim Green. Want to ban all non-revenue-producing sports. Again, those are create opportunities for people and for men and for women. And I think universities are about opportunities. And the other thing, I just want to say this, because you mentioned something that's absolutely wonderful, Buzz. Before every football game and before every athletic contest at the high school level and in the college level, everyone, both sides, we stand up and if we don't sing, at least we stand and respectfully observe the Star Spangled Banner, this country's song. And our national anthem, what a beautiful thing. That's the only place where a community, where an entire school comes together and stands up and respects the national anthem. You don't do it anywhere else.
Malcolm's
in
not
college
singing
experience.
It, sir, question.
Actually, Mr. Bissinger, I did go to the University of Chicago, and I did play football there. They reinstituted football in 1969.
On a very, very minor scale.
Yes, so it's Division III.
Right. But they wear helmets and hit each other.
We do actually wear helmets and hit each other a lot.
You can't. Not touch.
Mr. Whitlock, I do work on Wall Street as well, so actually I think I had some success in my career after graduating from the University of Chicago. I can tell you this much. The University of Chicago athletes in general, not just football, but athletes overall, have a higher GPA when I graduated in 2000 than the overall student body. So your question, the argument of athletics and education, there is a correlation between education
and
athletics.
So
the question is this.
Yeah.
Now, it is also true that Division I programs without football, no one makes money. Football programs pay for all the other sports. So once you ban football, how do you pay for women's swimming? How do you pay for every other sport there is? Because there is a correlation between athletics and economics.
How do you pay for women's thing the way you pay for a lot of things?
Taxes?
No,
you mentioned taxes earlier.
No, you get a rich benefactor, and there are plenty out there who will pay for the program because, frankly, that's what's happening now. The next phase of college football will be Boone Pickens. Why is Oklahoma State so good? Because he's given $300 million to the football program. The University of Oregon, it came out of nowhere to be a football power. Why? Because of the hundreds of millions given by Phil Knight. If you want to have women swimming, you have a benefactor play for it. And you know as well as I do that Chicago is in a very, very different place than the 125 BCS schools. There is no question at places like Chicago and Harvard and Wesleyan where kids don't think that they're going to be pro football players. The most formidable person I've ever met is an athlete because they don't quit. But you know what the problem with athletes are? You know where they do the best? Because Wall Street. And you know why Wall Street is so screwed up? Is because athletes, true, athletes don't know when to quit. They're only about winning.
Ma'am. Sorry. Thanks.
One of the greatest American philosophers, John Dewey, wrote a book called Democracy in Education, and he discusses the importance of sport and play in the both K through 12 education as well as the system of American higher education. And I'm wondering what the side for banning college football would think, John Dewey would think, of the idea of taking sport and play out of the curriculum of American higher education when it actually is a really important part of the higher education of an individual, whether it's intramural sports or I don't know what the level of college sports is. But
okay.
We're not talking about taking sports out of the curriculum. We're talking about banning semi-professional, or maybe Buzz might have a slightly different interpretation of this than me. But I think that you, if you look at schools like, for example, MIT, which has one of the highest participation rates in intramural sports in the country, their level of play is far higher than everybody else's, perhaps as a consequence of the fact that they've turned their backs on big-time college sports. So I think you could, if we focused on precisely what John Dewey was interested in doing, which is bringing sports down to the level of the average, the ordinary student, then that would be more easily achieved if we got away from this preoccupation with these enormously costly and dangerous spectacles.
And just to clarify, I mean, you could have, you know, people might not like it. You can have wonderful club sports that can be very, very competitive. I mean, you can have a schedule. The amount of travel the teams do is ridiculous. You can have a schedule where you're competing against regional teams. I think John Dewey was talking about the development of the whole individual. The fact is there's no phys ed anymore in schools. Everything is about and by and for the athlete. And what happens is you create the athletic culture.
Let me put to the other side. So the solution of having club sports as opposed to sports at the level that you guys played, what would that do?
You're limiting Jason access LeBron. For a lot of people, so
you're not going to have Green. College scholarships for the athletes. And I mean, one thing I do want to say though is on this line. I mean, are we talking about banning college football? Are we talking about only banning college football if it's Division I college football? Are we talking about Division III, Division II football? That's okay. But
no,
Division
because
one,
I mean, I think the model of Division II and Division III is better. I think if you read William Bowen's book, I think it's called Game of Play. It's a fantastic book based on data that he got from the Ivy League and from Duke. I mean, the one thing he did point out, and the little three, he said it's a total fallacy to think that the Ivy League does not recruit and does not play games with scholarships, and that Williams actually gives more athletic preference to athletes than the University of Michigan. I think all these programs are lost leaders, and, you know, look,
so you're saying ban college football
here's what
entirely.
I'm advocating that there are other ways to do it, whether it's a minor league system, whether it's an NFL developmental system. Why not the European model? The European model, they don't use their colleges and universities to create soccer players. They have sports academies. They have schools. They pluck players as young as six because they say, All right, you want to be a soccer player? You're showing talent, and they go to school there. And the other thing they do that is smart and beneficial is if you're not going to make it, you're weeded out early. So you
All
learn
right.
at an
Buzz,
early
because
age.
Because of Wait time, only right, because right. of time, I want to give you 15 seconds to respond if you
so,
want to.
So we're not going to ban college football. We're just going to change it. Because we're going to have colleges that have football teams, and some of those players, the players who want, get to go and get their education. So
no,
they still
I think we ban college football, and then you have a developmental system for those who are at the higher echelons of competition, and for the rest of the schools
that are called Syracuse University, Texas Longhorns,
yeah,
Oklahoma Sooners.
I mean, you license it out. You
okay,
license
as
it
long
out.
As they can go to school, and those 70% that want to get their education can get it. I think it's
yeah,
great.
That
All right,
70%.
That concludes round two of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. And remember how you voted at the beginning of the debate. We're going to ask you to vote again in just a few minutes after the closing statements, which will come immediately and be briefly. Round three, closing statements. 2 minutes each, uninterrupted. Our motion is ban college football. And here to summarize his position against the motion, Tim Green, a best-selling author, former Atlanta Falcon, and College Football Hall of Famer.
There is no question that there are problems with college football, as there are problems with almost every institution in this country. But I hope that after some of the things you've heard tonight from Jason and from me, people who've benefited from the education of college, the education we had on the football field with the perseverance, the hard work, the teamwork, the tolerance, and the benefits that accrued to us through our education. Where we earn the opportunity to get college degrees, and sometimes some of the people who get those degrees wouldn't have another way to get them except through the college, through the football scholarships. So there are great things. They unify our communities in many instances. They unify campuses and colleges, and the reason why it's there is because it is doing good things. And yes, it's making money, and yes, the coaches are making money. And this is America. It's capitalism. I'm sorry, Brad Pitt makes $25 million to make a movie. That's our society. So we pay people, what the market says we should pay them. Football, there are concussions, but there are no studies so far that link that to anything other than some isolated instances. So football, and it's evolving with the equipment and the rules. It can continue to get better, but to end it, Malcolm Gladwell may be best known for his book called Blink. And in that book, it says that when you're faced with a crucial decision or any decision, just listen to the premise and then give your immediate impression. So that's what I want to ask you to do tonight. Think about this. Think about, are we going to ban college football? And in a blink, I think you'll vote that we will not.
Thank you, Tim Green. Our motion is ban college football, and here to summarize his position in support of the motion, Buzz Bissinger, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, sports columnist for The Daily Beast, and author of Friday Night Lights.
I mean, look, there's no question. This is a radical solution, but I think it is called for in what are radical times. I'm surprised that Tim and Jason seem not to be affected at all about our lagging academic performance, that we're now 14th in the world in math and reading and science when we used to be first, that we're 16th in educational attainment, meaning that other countries are catching up and catching up rapidly and exceeding us. When we used to be first, we simply do not have time to waste. Universities were set up for a primary academic purpose. They were not set up as sports factories disguised as universities. And I understand the graduation rate is 69%. I think it's ginned up. I think a lot of players, and I think even Tim, he'll admit this to me privately afterwards, a lot of players are pushed through and passed through with no demands placed upon him. And I know the impact. I did write a book called Friday Night Lights in which the cornerstone character was a black running back named Boobie Miles. Now, this was high school, and I saw what happened, as many college players are, when you are treated as a football animal. When you pass, because the word on the street is, the professors is, you better pass that kid or there's going to be trouble. Boobie Miles got no education. He was a football animal. He was considered dysfunctional, basically an idiot, which he was not. And I'll tell you, with no education, his life has been nothing, nothing but a horrendous hell and a lot of broken dreams that football propagates more than any other sport.
Thank you, Buzz Bissinger. Ben, college football, that is our motion, and here to argue his position against this motion, Jason Whitlock. He is a national columnist for FoxSports.com and an all-sports insider and contributor to Fox Sports Radio.
I want to start where I began by wanting Mr. Gladwell, Mr. Bissinger, Malcolm Buzz, two of the brightest minds I've ever encountered. And I, when I said the comment about them dabbling in sports, it's because most of the time they apply their mind to much bigger issues than sports. And so it's been a worthy debate. Mr. Gladwell began talking about the purpose of schools, and overall education is about preparing you for life. And I think if they had a bit more experience with college football, actual participation, and I don't mean that in any kind of dismissive way, but it's something you have to experience, because I don't think most people understand the educational benefits of college football, and it's dismissed as a bunch of dummies. Brady Hoke, the head football coach at the University of Michigan, is a very good friend of mine. He played football at Ball State University. He had been the head coach at Ball State University. I have watched him up close and personal in this era reach kids at Ball State University, at San Diego State University, and now at the University of Michigan with an entire leadership program and men-building program that he and his strength coach implement throughout a player's 4- and 5-year career, and it helps develop the overall person. And it helps prepare the athlete for life in the real world. That is a school's purpose. If we truly understood football and what was transpiring, I don't think anyone would argue that it's not part of the academic experience. It may be part of the academic experience that some people don't respect because they don't understand it, but trust me, it is a big part of the academic experience. It's not perfect. It can be improved. It can be more like the Ivy League system, but there's no way we should ban football.
Thank you, Jason Whitlock. Our motion is ban college football, and here to summarize his position in support of the motion, Malcolm Gladwell, a New Yorker staff writer and author of The Tipping Point.
The most surprising thing about this debate to me in the end was that we only mentioned the name Junior Seau twice. And to my mind, Junior Seau's shadow is cast over this whole evening. Last week, shot himself in the chest, and he played 4 years at the University of South Carolina, Southern California, over which time I'm guessing he was hit in the head about 4,000 times. He's not the first. Before Junior Seau, there was Dave Duerson, played 4 years at the University of Notre Dame, during which time he was probably hit in the head around 4,000 times. He wasn't the first either. Before him, there was Andre Waters, shot himself in the head, played 4 years at Cheney University, over which time he was probably hit in the head at least 4,000 times. I could go on and on and on, right down to the captain of the Penn football team, who hung himself in his room a couple of years ago. And when they did an autopsy on his brain, what did they find? They found evidence, long-term neurological damage that was the result of being hit in the head too many times. Now, I have sat and I've listen to some of the things that the other side have said have been extraordinarily eloquent. I think some of the things that both Tim and Jason said about what this game can do are absolutely true. It is in many ways a beautiful game. It's a game that teaches all kinds of powerful and fundamental lessons. It's a game that's a central part of our culture. But at a certain time, I think this debate comes down to one thing, and that is you have to look at the collateral damage this game has left in its wake, and you have to ask the question, is it time to say enough?
Thank you, Malcolm Gladwell. And that concludes our closing statements. And now it's time to see which side you feel has made the best argument here. We want to ask you again to go to the keypads at your seat to register your vote. This will be your second vote. Our motion is ban college football. If you feel that this team presented the stronger argument, press number one. If it's this team, number two, decide against. If you're undecided or became undecided, push number three. And you can ignore the other keys, and if you press anything by mistake, just correct yourself and the system will lock in your last vote. So we'll have those results in about 140 seconds from now. And while we're waiting for the votes, I just want to ask, this debate was actually one of our best ever, and part of it was because they really heard each other. They didn't agree, but they listened to each other, and that made it a far more interesting debate. I just want to thank them and the round of applause for what they did here. Also, just a little secret, there was a wager placed in the back room before the debate began. Everybody, the four guys, put up $20 each. So there's a $40 cash prize in it for whoever wins this thing. We want to thank our media partner, Slate, especially Jacob Weisberg and his exceptional editorial staff. They've been with us all season. And this is our last debate here at the Skirball Center at NYU. It's been our venue since the fall of 2009. Thank you to the staff and crew for six great seasons here. We really appreciate it. And I have a very, very short side competition. I'm going to ask a question. The first person in the audience who can answer this question correctly, you'll have about 15 seconds. We'll get two free tickets to the first debate in our next season. And the question is this. It's football related. What does the Heisman Trophy have to do with a man named Ed Smith, and who was he? You got it? Yes. He was a football player and, sorry? The model for the Heisman Trophy was an NYU football player. Class of 1936. This fall, we are moving up. Congratulations. This fall, we're moving uptown to the Kauffman Center. That's on West 67th Street between Broadway and Amsterdam Avenue, and dates are set and tickets are already on sale. We're going to be following the presidential election particularly closely this fall, and that means we're going to be doing topics like super PACs and health care and taxing the wealthy. Motions and debaters will be announced this summer. One other thing. We are very, very delighted to announce a new partnership. It is with the Richard Paul Richmond Center for Business Law and Public Policy. That's a joint venture of the Columbia Business School and the Columbia Law School. The Richmond Center is going to co-sponsor two debates during the fall 2012 and spring 2013 season, beginning with an October 24th debate on domestic tax policy. That will be featuring Glenn Hubbard, who is Dean of Columbia Business School. Glenn Hubbard previously served as Deputy Assistant Secretary at the U.S. Department of the Treasury and as Chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors. And once again, we are partnering this evening with New American Tavern around the corner to host a post-debate reception at Amity Hall. That's a locale around the corner, a block away on 3rd Street between Thompson and Sullivan. Details for that location are in your program, but it's just really literally on the other side of this building. And there you can continue this debate with your fellow audience members over complimentary appetizers and discounted drinks. And I'll be there along with some of the other members of our staff for a little bit. We did it last time, and it was great. People just wanted to keep debating the issue with each other. So we hope that we'll see you there. So that's it. I'm just waiting for the results to come, and here they come for the $40 cash prize and the glory. All right, it's all in. You have heard all of the arguments, two teams of two trying to change your minds throughout this debate. Ban college football. That is our motion. Ban it or not. Here are the results. Before the debate, 16% were for the motion, 53% were against, 31% were undecided. After the debate, 53% are for the motion. That's up 37%. 39% are against. That's down 14%. 8% are undecided. The side arguing for the motion carries the debate. Our congratulations to them. Thank you from me, John Donvan, and Intelligence Squared US. We'll see you next time.